And we need to look still closer, though, I think, about at these ideas about power to understand what Peter inherited. For in many ways, 17th century ideas about the nature and legitimacy of the Russian monarchy, about the nature of power, would remain long influential, even in Peter's time, indeed, well into, I think, the 20th century. First, one has to keep in mind that the Russian monarch considered himself and called himself and was called by others an autocrat. And the system of which he ruled was an autocracy, in Russian, samodержавие. This meant complete and unlimited personal power. Literally, the word meant self-power. But really, matters are a lot more interesting and more complicated than that, especially if we look at how they justified and sanctified their enormous power, especially to themselves. So when we look at the Russian monarchy in the 17th and early 20th centuries, especially when we listen to Russians praising and defending Tsarist power, one sees two basic ideas, not unlike the two heads of the eagle on the top of the scepter of the ruler. On the one side, the ruler is seen to be a secular force, a secular power, potentissimus et invictissimus, as Alexei's throne said. And it's helpful to actually think of this with a Russian word, a word that you'll hear later in this course as well, namely the Tsar as Grozny. So just the sound of the word gives you a sense of what it means, as a Tsar who's awesome in his power and might, fierce, mighty. In fact, the word Grozny was the name given to Ivan the Great, Ivan the Terrible, I mean, who ruled in the 16th century, whose Russian name, which we translate as terrible, was indeed Grozny. Ivan the Awesome might be a better translation. And indeed, his rule was one that used great force and might and violence even to unify the Russian state and to strengthen the power of the monarch. But the term Grozny was also applied to other great and powerful Russian czars. But there was also a second face to the idea of power, legitimate power in Russia. And this was the monarch as a sacred and loving ruler, as a Christian monarch. And again, there's a useful Russian term here. The sound, again, is somewhat suggestive. This is the Tsar as tishaishi, literally as most quiet, as most gentle. In other words, as a pious, saintly ruler. This was, in fact, formally applied to Peter the Great's father, Alexei, known as Alexei Tishaishi. But it was also part of the self-ideal of many rulers, as we'll see. Both words, of course, both ideas are not simply Russian, most importantly. The idea of a mighty, secular, powerful ruler traced its origins to many Western European, indeed, Mongol models as well. And indeed, it was not unusual for czars to be compared to the great rulers of ancient Rome in their secular side. But when they wish to emphasize their pious side, their Christian side, their saintly side, their tishaishi side, then they would talk about how they inherited the mantle of Byzantine rulers, though they too were also mighty rulers. Most importantly, rarely did one side exist without the other. These two faces of power, of idealized power, would be central to the way every ruler thought about rule, as you'll see. And I should say the relationship between these two forms are not are complicated. In part, they're unified. Sacred power means strong power. Strong power means you serve God better. But there's also a tension. The sacred sources of the Tsar's power could potentially limit his personal absolutism. After all, he needs to rule according to God's teachings, according to the interests and good of his people. He must rule truly with love. And as we look at individual rulers, we'll put some flesh on these abstract bones of political ideas. But keep in mind, these aren't just vague ideas. People really lived by these ideas. They were real political facts in many ways, and in many ways shaped Russian political culture. I want to move a little bit beyond the walls of state power and look at society and especially culture to see the way in which already before Peter, connections to the larger world were already visible. It's worth remembering that Western influences in Russia had a long history, though limited in many ways. Remember, many of the ruling elites of Russia were not purely Slavic. Remember, the very people who created the Russian state came from the north, were Vikings or Varangians. No less important, once Russia accepted Christianity, the cultural influence of Byzantium remained very strong in everything, in politics, in religion, in art, in architecture. By the late 17th century, though, we see an important change in the degree and the depth of Western influence. Became much more widespread, much more substantive than ever before.